Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the afternoon session of the City Council for April 23rd. Would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. I expect Commissioner Saltzman will join us shortly. And let's take up the first of just two items that we have on the council calendar this afternoon.
Item 365, accept report on the state of the arts from the Regional Arts and Culture Council.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to welcome to the podium three honored guests, Eloise Damrosch, RAC Executive Director, Lena Garcia-Siebold, RAC Board Chair, and Anna Rigby, RAC Executive Assistant, who will be running the PowerPoint. As the City's Arts Commissioner, it's an honor today to introduce my first State of the Arts presentation. This annual celebration of the arts is a chance to welcome artists and advocates to City Hall, to highlight the accomplishments of the past year, and to have some fun. Portland is known for many things, including its natural beauty, its environmental ethic, its commitment to innovation, its food, even its quirkiness. It is also known as a major cultural destination, a place where the creative spirit is nurtured and honored, and where arts and culture flourish. And this afternoon, I'm pleased to welcome the leaders and advocates to join us today, and I'm going to start by turning over the program to Eloise Damrosch. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Eloise Damrosch. I'm the Executive Director of the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And actually, before we begin our presentation, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce you to the Northwest Horn Orchestra, who will play for us a piece by Mendelssohn. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much. Mendelssohn with a little help from another century.
I'll spice it up a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Northwest Horn Orchestra, for setting just the right tone for this year's State of the Arts presentation. I'm here today with our fantastic board chair, Lena Garcia-Siebold, to share with you a year's worth of culture and arts activities. With us today also is our executive assistant, Anna Rigby, who keeps us all on track. This is a year's worth of experiences made possible by your continuous investments and support.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. My name is Lena Garcia-Siebold, and I'm board chair of the Regional Arts and Culture Council. I would like to add my personal thanks to City Council, our partners, our constituents, and all the great arts advocates who helped us pack the house today, including all of the RAC family. So what are the arts and RAC doing in and for our communities? Well, here's a quick snapshot. The arts are a powerful driving force for economic development. With a total economic impact of over $250 million, local arts organizations continue to be an engine for prosperity in this region. A total of 180,000 people benefited directly from RAC services last year. And as a former Tejana, I can tell you that would almost be the entire population of Knoxville, Texas, if we ever decided to move our efforts to a warmer spot in the country. Speaking of economic development and service, there are nearly 6,000 arts-centric businesses in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties, including arts organizations, design firms, media companies, and photography businesses. So you see there's a direct correlation between Portland's strong arts community and the broader creative workforce. Here's a picture of the wonderful people I get to serve with on this board. RAC services depend on partnerships, advocacy, and the leadership from our board. I truly feel honored to serve with such an engaged, diverse, and talented group of people. RAC's board members come from all trades and backgrounds, as you can see by evidenced by some of the board members that are in the audience today, such as the one to my left over here with the hat. And we strive to always recruit new members that reflect the diversity in our communities. RAC's board members are not only advocates for the arts, but also strong proponents of RAC's core values and beliefs. Equity, diversity, and inclusion are amongst those values which RAC has incorporated from the board level to staff leadership to all of RAC's team members. It is a thread that runs through everything we do.
As you know, our work is funded by a variety of public and private partners. Public funding accounts for about 85% of our budget, but we also raise about $700,000 each year in gifts and grants from the private sector, and we earn about $444,000 per year in fees for services and investment income. The City of Portland is our largest public funder, and we thank you wholeheartedly for that. This is actually typical for most local arts agencies in the U.S., that they have such city support. Last year, we received almost $4 million from the city's general fund and $1 million through the city's 2% for art program. By ordinance, the city provides another $200,000 each year in business license fee revenues, which RAC leveraged into more than $765,000 last year through Work for Art, our workplace giving program. Other public partners and funders include Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, Metro, as well as the Oregon Arts Commission. Just to be clear, these are audited financials from our fiscal year that ended on June 30th, 2013, and we did not receive any funding from the Arts Education and Access Fund until early 2014. We'll talk a little bit later about the $200,000 that RAC received a few months ago from the arts tax. On the expense side, you can see that 88.5% of our budget is spent on programs and services for the community, with only 11.5% going to management and general administrative expenses, and that's definitely something we're very proud of. Our programs and services include advocacy, public art, and arts education, but the majority of our budget each year goes directly out in grants.
Indeed, RAC's grants reach far and deep into the community. 148 nonprofit organizations, 161 individual artists, and four schools benefited from grants in 2013, receiving a total of $3.3 million in funding. Among these grants is Boom Arts, which you can see in this picture, a presenter and producer of culturally based programming who received a project grant in 2013.
48 organizations, including Fame Academy, pictured here, are part of the pool of organizations that receive $1.7 million in unrestricted general operating support to allow them to do what they do best, enriching our communities through their high-quality plays, performances, and programs. General operating support organizations distinguish themselves through artistic excellence, proven service to the community, as well as administrative and fiscal competence. We as Portlanders can be very proud of the cultural and artistic richness these organizations are bringing to our region, attracting visitors from near and far. And not just visitors, arts and culture have a significant draw for companies and businesses that are looking to relocate. To them, a thriving arts and culture scene, as well as arts education available for their children, are great indicators of a city's quality of life, innovation, and creativity. Here you see families visiting the Portland Art Museum's Samurai exhibit on their Free Family and Community Day. And speaking of attracting the community, these 48 organizations, among them Portland Center Stage, have a combined annual attendance of 2.9 million people, which would be the entire population of Chicago, Illinois, if our organizations ever thought about moving to a colder spot in the country. In addition to these 48 organizations, including Blue Sky Gallery, are a true economic powerhouse with combined purchasing and payroll power of $80 million per year and an extended economic impact of $120 million per year when you consider all of the restaurants, parking garages, and retail stores that directly benefit when people attend a local arts event.
From the big grants to the smaller ones. Among RAC's different grants categories, project grants are the most diverse in terms of artistic disciplines, cultural representation, and community served. Over $600,000 was awarded to individual artists, arts organizations, and schools in the Tri-County area. All of the funded projects have to have a public component, using the arts and culture as a vehicle to spark conversations and bring people together. This, for instance, was a performance of 10 tiny dances, bringing together a variety of dance groups to perform on a stage that isn't much bigger than this table. Professional development grants are RAC's smallest grants category, which oftentimes serve as an entry point for artists and arts organizations. Almost $80,000 was awarded to 8 individuals, artists, and arts organizations. Applicants can receive up to $1,500 to help them get to the next level in the creation of their art or the running of their business. The Jewish Theater Collaborative, for instance, received funding for an intensive training workshop in a particular adaptation and performance technique. After the workshop, the group told us this funding has already made a terrific impact on us. It's like pouring steroids on our roots. Watch us grow.
In addition to these grants, weaving a net across the community, RAC also awards $20,000 each year to an individual artist in rotating artistic disciplines. This year's fellow in literary arts is writer Sally Tisdale, whose work stretches from personal poems to complex essays, from short memoirs to books. The award helps artists sustain or enhance their creative process.
We created a special funding opportunity last year for organizations that work with underserved artist communities, such as communities of color and other new Portlanders. Many organizations applied to RAC for the first time through this process, and we were thrilled to support a broad range of programs and projects. The Latino Art Now Collective, for instance, used the funds to organize Pláticas, a conversation series with local Latino artists.
Although our report today focuses on the services we provided in 2013, we think it's pertinent to also tell you what we did with the $200,000 that we received from the Arts Education and Access Fund in January of this year. As you know, it is RAC's responsibility to administer the allocation that is left after Portland school districts have hired their art and music teachers. Of the $200,000 that RAC received, about $150,000 went straight to the 44 Portland-based organizations eligible for operating support, including CHAP and Miracle Theater. We're still nowhere near the goal of funding these organizations at 5% of their eligible revenue, which they deserve and need in order to have a truly sustainable funding stream.
$26,000 of the $200,000 allowed us to provide another round of culturally specific funding opportunities. This year's Expanding Cultural Access RFP invited Portland-based organizations to apply for projects and programs that reach populations that have not received the type of public service they should. This time, we have broadened our reach from communities of color and New Portlanders to the disabled and the LGBTQ communities. We look forward to reporting on the list of funded organizations and projects in May.
RAC goes far beyond administering grant dollars. In fact, we're playing a leading role in the education of our community's children. The Right Brain Initiative is RAC's premier arts integration program, which transforms learning for all children through the arts, and creativity, innovation, and whole brain thinking. We all know that students who participate in arts education exhibit marked improvement in other subjects, including reading, science, and math. And Right Brain focuses specifically on integrating the arts into these subjects. Here at Woodlawn Elementary in Northeast Portland, pre-K students worked with Right Brain partner organization Oregon Ballet Theater. Through dance, the kids use the unique form of movement to focus on self and spatial awareness and to learn about our body's systems and capabilities. More and more schools, principals, and teachers enthusiastically embrace the program and how it can change the feel of the entire schoolhouse. Currently, the Right Brain Initiative is in 49 schools across 6 districts. Right Brain is a perfect example of a collective impact model that convenes private and public partners, teachers, principals, art specialists, and other educators, as well as teaching artists and arts organizations around one common goal: a well-rounded education for every child in the region and giving teachers new tools to teach common core subjects through the arts. The National Endowment for the Arts has acknowledged the transformational power of Right Brain, and we're excited that just last week we received our third grant from the NEA. Over 13,000 children are benefiting from the joint community effort that is the Right Brain Initiative. Watch the program grow as we add new schools and students every year.
As local schools adapt to new state and national standards, Right Brain is perfectly poised to help teachers infuse the arts into core subjects, helping students conquer the content. Here you see an example of the arts deepening fifth graders' understanding of the Declaration of Independence. Through writing personal essays and using printmaking processes, the students explored how relevant the Declaration is today and learned about expressing their own individuality. Right Brain is also piloting work around STEM to STEAM. This national initiative, turning STEM into STEAM by adding an A for the arts, is a perfect fit for Right Brain's integrated arts programming. Congresswoman Susan Bonamici, who launched a bipartisan congressional STEAM caucus, regularly cites Right Brain as an example of STEAM programming. And Right Brain is looking to take the STEAM model into more schools in the Portland metropolitan area. Here, for instance, you see first graders learn how instruments make sound through vibrations with My Voice Music. By the end of the fifth session, students learn the physics of how sound waves move and interact with their environment.
Through the Arts Education and Access Fund, RAC will help Portland school districts develop a continuous course of study in the arts and/or music education, K through 12, coordinate between school districts and arts organizations, and facilitate access to programs supported by the fund. We look forward to taking on this role as soon as collections allow. Still, we have been able to provide some professional development for art specialists through the fund. Last fall and this spring, Right Brain provided 6 hours of professional development training for 26 art specialists in Portland.
Another big focus of our work is public art. Currently, there are about 2,000 pieces in the public art collection that RAC manages and maintains. Here you see a map of projects that have been added since last year. The green dots on the map are murals that continue to bring together our communities and neighborhoods all across town.
One of these new murals is in Woodstock on Southeast 45th. The mural has three sections which reflect themes of the neighborhood: commerce, education, and the outdoors. The writing right in the middle is the neighborhood motto translated in Mandarin by Woodstock Elementary's Mandarin Immersion Program. Every once in a while, Teddy and his colleagues need some polishing. We don't have any favorites in the collection. Like responsible parents, our goal is to take good care of all of them. Maintenance and conservation of over 170 outdoor public sculptures is definitely a big and important part of our work. If you haven't walked down Davis Street since Dan Corson installed his sculptures, you really should, especially when they're lit up at night. Dan's Nepenthes are inspired by huge carnivorous plants, a touch of nature in an urban environment, and also a dynamic way to bring some light to what was previously a dark street. The Portland Building Space installations transform the plain little nook in the Portland Building's entrance hall into a space of surprise, questions, and inspiration. Ariana Jacobs' installation sparked conversations about what it means to be part of the U.S. By presenting the U.S. Constitution as the bed we made for ourselves as a country, Ariana invited people to consider what lying on that foundation means in both poetic and practical terms. I like to think of the Visual Chronicle as Portland's heart, captured on paper. The Chronicle portrays artists' perceptions of what makes Portland unique. Right now, there are over 300 works from 179 different artists in the collection. And here you can see artwork by Native American artist James Lavador that we recently acquired for the Portable Works collection from the Crow Shadow Institute. Portable works are on display throughout city and county buildings. We're also excited about this first in a series of residencies for the Portland Archives and Records Center. Two artists are exploring materials in the archives that focus on surveillance files from the Portland Police Bureau collected on activist groups from the 60s to the 80s. The artists call it the Watcher Files Project. Much of their work revolves around unheard voices and gaps in the official record and brings up some interesting aspects of Portland's history. You might want to call it an artistic investigation of the past.
Another way that RAC supports the local arts community is to raise money and awareness for the arts. Through advocacy and development, we are raising the bar on public and private investments in arts and culture. Here you see ballet dancer Catherine from the Oregon Ballet Theater having fun with Burgerville employees as part of their Work for Art campaign.
Work for Art raised $764,000 last year. And here you see some of the people who made it possible, including Charlie Frazier from Portland Center Stage, which was the top nonprofit campaign last year, Jim Pyro from PGE, which raised the most money, $76,000, and Jeff Harvey and Jack Graves from Burgerville, which had more employees give than any other company. Jeff Harvey has chaired the campaign for the last 2 years, and we thank him for his leadership. Mike Golub of the Portland Timbers, and also a loyal RAC board member, has agreed to chair next year's campaign. Mike will surely continue the tradition of getting local companies and their CEOs to compete with each other to see who can raise the most money for our local arts organizations. Over the last 8 years, Work for Art has raised more than $4.7 million for the local arts community, and we want to thank you, City Council, for being part of it. This year, 79 city employees contributed over $10,000, which is helping us meet our goal of raising $775,000 by June, and we're almost there. And we hope that everyone who contributed $60 or more is enjoying their arts card, which gives them two-for-one tickets to hundreds of arts events all year long.
Serving the community is what arts and culture are all about, and new artists and arts enthusiasts arrive in Portland every year. It is no surprise to us, since Portland is truly becoming a mecca for artists and creatives, making it one of the most livable cities in the United States. Over 500 of them attended RAC's networking and community event ArtSpark last year. For artists, it isn't just about creating. Running their business, marketing their work, and applying for funding are integral parts of their work. RAC offers workshops for artists, such as this one with Kimberly Howard on grant writing. We collaborate with community partners all across town, such as Q Center in North Portland, to host these workshops. By doing so, we're making a conscious effort to bring the workshops out to the community instead of asking the community to come to us.
Through the Cultural Leadership Program, generously funded by the Paul G. Allen Foundation, 43 organizations benefited from arts management consulting through local arts guru George Thorne. Many of you might know him already. If you don't, just let me say he's a force of nature when it comes to helping arts organizations in their leadership. Sometimes we make a special effort to highlight our outdoor public art collection. Here is Bud Clark, former mayor, a pretty outstanding public figure, and an avid bike rider. In true Bud Clark style, this group took a bike tour of Portland's public artscape in this last summer. Last November, we proved once again that Portland is trending. As a host for the National Arts Marketing Project Conference, we attracted over 675 arts marketing professionals from across the nation, making this a record-breaking year for that conference. And I just want to point out that all these people came to Portland during the darkest of months. Maybe we should stay right where we are and not move to Knoxville, Texas, or Chicago. RAC's website is jam-packed with resources. Whether you're looking for a job in the arts, applying for a grant, or searching our calendar of local events, RAC.org is the place to go, and 126,000 people did so in 2013. We also publish an e-newsletter every month and a printed version every other month for more than 5,000 subscribers.
Las demográficas de nuestras comunidades están cambiando. The demographics of our communities are changing, and we're working to follow suit by trying to eliminate barriers, including language barriers. Since 2011, we have been providing translated materials in Spanish, Vietnamese, and Russian, and offer over-the-phone translations if someone has a question for us that we are unable to answer in their preferred language. Speaking of removing barriers, Arts for All allows anyone who is part of the SNAP program to purchase tickets to a variety of performances for $5 per person. Portland Baroque Orchestra, Oregon Children's Theater, Capella Romana, the Symphony, and Portland Center Stage are only a few organizations that participate in that program. Arts for All, it's not just the name of a program, but a sentiment that we at RAC share with the rest of the arts community. With that, I want to say gracias por tu apoyo, su apoyo. Thank you for your continued support.
And I'll add a heartfelt thank you from me. This has been a fabulous year, and I want to thank you all for all that you've done to help make it so. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Great work. Questions? And you have this. These three are the panelists. You don't have other specific folks that you've invited to speak this afternoon?
I think
there are probably others who want to speak.
There are others who will be speaking.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. I'm just curious, how are schools selected for Right Brain Initiative artists? Or what criteria?
The schools or the artists?
The schools.
We work with the district superintendents to identify which schools they want to enroll in the program each year and give them some support in making the best selection for what they're trying to achieve. Sometimes they want to highlight the most needy schools. sometimes they like to have kind of a balance to check against each other, so they might pick a slightly less needy school, but it's kind of up to them.
Eloise, now that the cat's out of the bag and you have you've disclosed you have the Labrador, can I get in the queue for that?
I was going to say something about that, and I thought I'd let you do it.
Okay. Well, congratulations. So you said about the public art collection that it's like you're an extended family, or your children, you're not going to pick favorites, but I do have some favorites, mostly the Lee Kellys. So would you remind us, if someone wants to know where they are on a map and wants to do a tour over a weekend, for example, how can they access our collection and know where to go?
Good question. We do have a printed walking tour brochure that's available at hotels and downtown locations. And then we have an app for phones, so you can download your app and then travel around the city and read about what each one is. And then Portland Maps has another version of the inventory. And all of the images are accessible through our inventory on our website.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is, a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to go hear Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who came as part of a program that brings great writers to our community. She talked about her autobiography. And the Schnitz was full, and there were 1,000 people at the Art Museum watching it on closed-circuit TV. And I was really struck by that moment. And can you extrapolate? Is there something we can gauge about the audience today and the enthusiasm for these events and this moment?
There seems to be a trend nationally about how audiences are changing. I think part of that is because of so many younger people becoming engaged in going to things. There's a trend away from buying your ticket, sitting in your seat, getting up and going home, and then maybe reading the program when you got home. Audiences are wanting more and more interaction and more live experiences that yes, are the wonderful offering that they bought a ticket for, but also they want more interaction. And I think events like that where you get to feel part of an audience even if you're not in the primary venue. Northwest Dance just did the same thing recently. Portland Opera does an outdoor projection. And then the symphony, of course, with the Symphony in the Park. Those are the kinds of opportunities that more and more people are looking for, and that once we have some of these access funds through the AEAF, the access fund, we're hoping to have more of that happen. And it's not about doing it instead of what the organizations are doing. I mean, we are blessed, as we said, with some of the finest offerings in Portland of anywhere. And that is why we're trying to raise the bar on support for these organizations. And they are very mindful of the need to sort of change up their audience and provide more access.
Wonderful.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Let's see who else is here to testify, but thank you.
We have eight people signed up, and the first three, please come on up, are Barry Sanders, Anne Marie Oliver, and Sean Garnett.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Whoever would like to be first, go right ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Sean Garnett, and I'm a principal with Portland Public Schools. I'm at Markham K-5 in Southwest Portland. And I'm here on behalf of Right Brain to tout how wonderful they are. This is my third year experiencing Right Brain as a principal, and I have to say that you heard a lot of what I was going to say today, but in my own words, the integration of arts with academics, they infuse it so seamlessly. And what it does is it puts educators together with these artists, and they collaborate together and plan based on the children's curriculum and come up with something where the children are able to where they infuse the art with their learning. And what it does, it has motivated the children even more. And for example, we talk about three types of learning. There's the visual, the auditory, and the kinesthetic. When you infuse the arts into children's learning, you meet those needs of all those learners. So therefore, you have more children engaged and more children motivated. I have to say it also raises the awareness with the teachers, the educators, by them thinking more about what they are planning in order to make sure that children get experience with the different disciplines of the art. And so as a child goes through, in this case, Markham, they will have experienced lots and various disciplines in the arts. And lastly, I will say that since I've been there, and when the artists come in and they work with the teacher, they work with the students, it increases their confidence exponentially, so that children will come to me and say during a lunchtime, we have a small stage at Markham in our cafeteria. We also do assemblies once a month at Markham. They will ask to perform in those venues. And I've seen that happen near the end of the school year, middle to the end, every time they've experienced some type of residency with these artists.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Garnett, I learned how to be an American citizen at Markham Elementary. I had kids there for 10 years. Could you tell the rest of the council and the audience some of the demographics, the kind of school?
I would love to. Yes, Markham is a wonderful place. It is made up of about close to 400 students. It's 55% free and reduced. There is 22% English language learners. Majority of those students speak Somali. The second highest is Arabic.
Great.
I could go on. We have lots to offer there.
Thank you.
Eric? You want to go next, or should I?
Mayor? Hello? Commissioners? Significance, my name is Barry Sanders. I teach at PNCA and co-chair a graduate program in critical theory and creative research with my colleague and dear friend Anne Marie Oliver. That came off of my time. The
well,
significance.
We'll be generous. Go ahead.
Sui generous, or yes. You're going to be generous?
We'll be generous.
Okay.
That too.
Yeah, okay. Significance of the arts. It is a subject that has everyone talking. Even as that other culture, the applied sciences, goes after our very DNA with the aim of replicating life. While few people question science, we hear over and over, why should we care about painting and sculpting, dancing and reading? So how did we fall to debating the value of art while ignoring, say, the invisible and continuing horror that is Fukushima? Can aesthetics stand up to the atom? I say it must. Indeed, such power is inherent in the arts themselves. The word art has its root in Latin ars, which meant a way of being or acting, and took its life from armus, arm, and artus, joint or limb. Thus, art gets articulated in the movement of our limbs, in the very lighting up of all of our senses. That is aesthesia. The antonym of art is inert, or inart, our modern word inert. That is anesthesia. The meaning is clear. Without art, we fall into moral stagnancy and lose the very DNA of our soul. Sir Isaac Newton developed his theory of countering inertia, the first law in his Principia, not from science, but from art. Renaissance science stood in service of painting and poetry, and not the other way around. It remains the case. Art leads, science follows. Art creates, science recreates. People question the arts, I say, not out of ignorance, but out of fear. For the artist declares that however successful one might feel, however much capital one might have accumulated, we have no chance of taking decisive and moral action without the impulse and the movement imparted to us by the arts. That is Newtonian. As the monumental art historian Meyer Shapiro points out, art is debased, quote, in a society pervaded by the love of money, luxury, and pleasure. A society dominated by economic calculations must discourage art as something superfluous and wasteful. The pin maker has seemed to an economist more worthy than Raphael. Bioengineering has utilized aesthetics to make its story more insistent and bold. Design studios and advertising firms have colluded in transforming the dangers of GMO foods into pretty prose and even prettier pictures. Anne-Marie Oliver and I, with our MA program, aim to realign priorities. We must invigorate the imagination at its core. I cannot conceive of thinking these days without placing that activity within the confines of an ethical imagination. That can happen best in an arts-based, sense-based curriculum, which means real thinking must take place in institutions devoted more to the curved line and less to the bottom line. We might, at the end of this session on the arts, remember that young man William Shakespeare, who was born on April 23rd and who died 52 years later and some 37 plays later on the same date, April 23rd. Now that's aesthetics.
Thank you.
450 years ago.
Wow. Aren't you going to interrogate him?
No, not after that.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just in class a few moments ago at PNCA, where I co-chair the Critical Theory and Creative Research Program with Barry, we had a video piece on Google Glass, the new glasses, which you can do all kinds of interesting things with, and I kind of wish I had a pair now so I could see, have eyes in the back of my head. I find myself thinking a lot these days about one question, and it's this: what would Black Mountain College look like today? When we created the Critical Theory and Creative Research Program, we were interested in giving art students a different kind of future. And not only this, we thought it was indispensable for society as a whole that we do this. We united critical theory, which is devoted to socio-political critique, and this emerging field called creative research. Everybody is interested in research today. Everybody does research, but we don't know any longer how we do it. So to talk about creative research is to emphasize the human dimensions of research in the era of search engines, namely Google. There are about 250 criteria by which Google decides how to answer any given query, which no longer, a la Ask Jeeves, appear in the form of queries, but rather simply fragmented phrases and whatnot. 250 of them, almost all of them are trade secrets. We have something like an epistemological crisis. That is to say, how we know what it is we know is now in the hands of a single company. Again, we created this program in answer to this situation. What does creative research look like today? It is human-based research with human criteria. Why did we situate this program in an art school? Because we find there the last bastion of sense-based intelligence. Not algorithms, sense-based intelligence. And that's what I think one of the things the arts can do. We're interested in critique at every level and critique of technologies in particular, with, again, everyone interested in research. I'm going to offer, in the time I have left, which is almost nothing, a few reasons why I think we should pay attention to the arts here in Portland in particular. Portland is Portland because it synthesized so many often conflicting domains, nature, culture, entrepreneurship, and so forth. This is the epicenter of DIY culture. This is the epicenter of alternative book publishing. It's the epicenter of something very interesting going on. a different life is possible here, a different life and a different future, and one feels this almost immediately upon arrival. I've yet to meet a single individual who moved here for any other reason. They're here for magic. I feel deep gratitude to the people who make this magic every single day of their lives. They embed and embody the beautiful in every single thing they touch. The major trend of the last century, which continues on today, is mathematicization, as the philosopher Giorgio Agamben notes, and a concomitant standardization. The rising star called Portland continues to rise because it, again, proffers something radically different. This new model is integral and integrative. It is aesthetic and absolutely compelling. What is most compelling about it, perhaps, is the fact that the arts no longer are something separate from other domains. They've infused everything. 20 years ago, no one in America in general could have guessed that food could become and would become an aesthetic, if not an artistic, phenomenon. We're here in one of the major foodie capitals of the world, so-called. If you would like, you can easily monetize this phenomenon. The ritualization...
We'll give you some extra time. Go ahead.
That's
how much? The ritualization, resacralization, and making special of life through food, music, performance, film, dance, painting, writing, drawing, conceptualization, design, artisanal work of every sort, the reinvigoration of craft and craftsmanship, the resurrection of something close to a sacred guild is a philosophy of life, entailing pride and pleasure every step of the way. Portland's new bridge is a feat of engineering, as they say. It is also a work of art. That thing is beautiful. At a fundamental level, the two are inseparable. One experiences the bridge as something based on use value as well as aesthetics, and the two, again, are inseparable. Pride and pleasure, indeed, are big things. They provide life with rhythm and meaning in the way described by Lefebvre in his beautiful little book entitled Rhythm Analysis. They are devoted to the principle of exaltation. They mitigate against damage and destruction. Unhappy people are dangerous, as one of our recent speakers at PNCA, the film critic Heike Kuhn, noted, quoting the famous line of Goethe, "Indeed, such people are capable of destroying the world." This is the full quote. The really unhappy person is the one who leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. No wonder they come to grief. Which leads me to the second reason why we should pay close attention to the arts today. We can't afford not to. I never tire of the thinker named Marshall McLuhan, even though he's a Canadian. I'm particularly interested in a chapter in his masterpiece, Understanding Media, called Challenge and Collapse, the Nemesis of Creativity. In this essay, he sets forth an understanding of the artist as a particular kind of person who is not this group of people called artists are not united by the usual things. They're not united by intelligence. They're not united by socioeconomic status. They're united by one thing, and this goes way beyond McLuhan. They're united by a peculiar sense of time and of relating to time. Because they're good at pattern and extrapolation, they're capable actually of sensing the future before it occurs. And he didn't mean this in any woo-woo fashion. He meant it simply as the ability to extrapolate. Accordingly, artists are capable of building Noah's Arks. They're capable of warning people what to come before it happens. Here's a quote from this piece. "The percussed victims of the new technology have invariably muttered cliches about the impracticality of artists and their fanciful preferences. But in the past century, it has come to be generally acknowledged that, in the words of Wyndham Lewis, the artist is always engaged in writing a detailed history of the future because he is the only person aware of the nature of the present." Knowledge of this simple fact is now needed for human survival. I'm not going to read the rest due to time and the restraints of time, but it's clear that McLuhan, Wyndham Lewis, Henri Bergson, all of these people saw the artist not as something frivolous, but as something absolutely essential to human survival. New technologies come upon the scene. They're actually capable of creating what he calls percussed victims, people in shock, people in absolute shock. And we forget that animals die of shock every other minute. Art is a way of preparing people for what is to come, capable of actually, for McLuhan, saving the world. The city of Portland, I feel, can set an example and become a very important model for the nation, not only based on its attitude toward the arts, but by addressing head-on the current situation in the world, which I feel is precisely one of survival. We call upon artists, humanists, scientists, artisans, technologists, farmers, and business people to work together to come up with ideas as to how to begin to address a major problem affecting us, particularly on the Pacific coast, and that is Fukushima. Fukushima is an invisible phenomenon. It is tasteless and it is odorless, and this is where artists come into play. They can begin to try to visualize and make sensible what at this point in time is absolutely insensible and absolutely dangerous, capable of destroying us all. And we can start in the simplest way by doing also things that seem obvious to lots of people. We can close down the nuclear reactors in the city of Portland and its surrounds, and we respectfully request that this happen. There is simply no zero-risk facility. The third reason why we should pay close attention to the arts today is that they keep intelligence and perception together, and we see this ancient union as a solution in and of itself. A solution to what? A solution to dangerous unhappiness, to alienation, to the rifts between disciplines, to the anti-human. As Rudolf Arnheim at Harvard noted decades ago over and over again, intelligence is built into perception. The arts are devoted to their continuing union, the continuing union of perception and intelligence, with perception being its own form of intelligence and warning system. I'm almost finished. Four, the arts are devoted to the creation of models for living under these circumstances, models of the everyday, as noted, the creation of syntheses and rhythms, but they're also devoted to what we can call infinity devices, everything that allows us to catch a glimpse of other worlds and other possibilities, everything that allows us to escape what Arendt called the prison house of the self. The creation of a single new image capable of this kind of synthesis is a miracle. A single new image is capable of reconfiguring the world. A new image, noted the scientist and poet Gaston Bachelard, cost humanity as much labor as a new characteristic cost a plant. We want to argue for the labor of imagination. Some images are particularly powerful. Indeed, they're basically immortal. Of the pyramid, Peter Sloterdijk notes, it stands in its place, unshakable for all time, because its form is nothing other than the undeconstructible reminder of a construction that, following the plan of its architect, is built to look as it would after its own collapse. A pyramid is a particular form, a particular image that has anticipated its own demise and therefore is an immortal image, an immortal form. Fifth and last, we should pay close attention to and support the arts today because of what we can call the principle of exaltation. Perhaps inseparable from the archaic concept of heroism, it only takes one hero, actually. Education, what is it? It is the transmission from one generation to the next of everything that generation deems precious, without which life would become unrecognizable. We're writers and professors, and this is what we profess. Bakhtin explicitly linked art, risk, and heroism. He wrote The Magnificent Art and Answerability when he was in his 20s. His writing exalts. It's about the other, and I'm quoting him, that all the stories have been composed, all the books have been written, all the tears have been shed. It is to him that all the monuments have been erected. It is only with others that all the cemeteries are filled. It is only others who are known, remembered, and recreated by productive memory, so that my own memory of objects, of the world, and of life could also become an artistic memory. At the very point of death, Bakhtin wants to say, what we have left of any person, place, or thing is absolutely aesthetic. It is only aesthetics that allows us to remember. The poet doesn't describe things, wrote Bachelard. He he exalts them. I think we might live by this principle. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Mayor, before this distinguished panel leaves, Barry and Anne-Marie mentioned they teach a course at PNCA, and one of their students, Carmen Dennison, is now on the Arts Oversight Committee. So just another example of the connections between the arts and our broader culture. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next three are Angela Holt, Joaquin Lopez, and Yolanda Valdiza.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Hello. You go first.
Me go first? All right. Dear Mayor Hales and members of the Portland City Council, I am Joaquin Lopez, gay, bilingual, Latino, an accomplished artist, small business owner, musician, producer. I would like to state that the arts makes an impact. As a young boy with little resources for singing and dance classes, I wondered why other kids were lucky and had access. I felt less than and undeserving. The arts makes an impact. So I turned to acting, and as an actor, I was told I'm not macho or Latino enough, that I come across as gay, and that I could never do Shakespeare because my tongue works differently. I stopped acting. The arts makes an impact. As an arts professional, I have been singled out among my peers as a marginalized individual who lives on the margins of society creating art. Disempowered and humiliated, the arts makes an impact. Disenchanted, I wrote a grant. Voz Alta is an evening of music and poetry that celebrates the Latino American experience through poetic narratives that feature the lives of Portland's Latino LGBTQ community, performed by actors and orchestrated live with Latin American folk songs, a poetic and musical journey that expresses the beauty of love and illustrates the vulnerability and cultural contrasts of being Latino and American, queer and Latino, undocumented and legal. It is the opening event for Portland Latino Gay Pride at Q Center. I have the privilege to listen to people's stories and the honor to poetically dramatize and orchestrate them with traditional songs that define and ground us and live in our cultural memory. I do this because I believe in creating new spaces and experiences where tradition is honored, challenged, and reimagined. I do this because if I don't do this, Portland will not have a poetic record of who the Latino LGBTQ person is, how we live, struggle, and thrive. I was awarded a project grant for Voz Alta by RAC. The biggest impact has not been the money. The biggest impact has been time. Time spent with me on the phone, in a conference room, and in workshops. Time spent with me so that I understand how to clearly explain and see what I see and imagine. Time building a relationship, building my trust, and believing in me. With their support, I will empower my community through creative expression and continue the Voz Alta tradition. And it is my honor to stay in unison with RAC that the arts makes an impact. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. There are a lot of hard acts to follow in this parade.
There are some very hard acts to follow.
There have been several now.
Well, thank
you.
You're
in a tough spot.
I'm in a tough spot, you know what? But thank you for the privilege of hearing your story. Thank you.